flurries of fun await this winter in Indiana. Feel the rush of the Midwest's only refrigerated toboggan run. Ski down snow-covered slopes and marvel at frozen waterfalls on a winter hike. When it's time to unwind, from outdoor fun to indoor escapes, your perfect winter getaway starts in Indiana. Plan your trip today at inindiana.com/winter.
Your official station to talk Knicks. The Fan, 101.9 FM, and always live on the free Odyssey app.
Yeah, that Trent Baalke, the Jaguar situation is... That's an interesting thing. You know, it kind of leads you to the Jets a little bit. Me and Fleas are talking about this, and it's something I've been saying for forever. The benefit of the doubt, because can you imagine if that would have happened with the New York Jets? So if you haven't heard, Liam Cohen, the offensive coordinator for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, was the first choice for Shad Khan, the owner of the Jacksonville Jaguars. That's who he wanted to hire as his new head coach. But the idea that they still had Baalke as the general manager to the team was kind of, everybody was turning down the job. I mean, he was asked in a press conference, what if a coach told you they needed a change in the front office, or they would see the front office in a different way? He flat out said, well, I mean, listen, if they had a good plan to how to make it better, how would you not do it? So, I mean, that's the GM he decided to keep after firing the Super Bowl winning head coach. So obviously, Liam Cohen turns down the job while Baalke's still attached to the team. He's going to go sign a contract with Tampa Bay to stay the coordinator. It's going to be the richest contract for any offensive coordinator in the history of the NFL. He's coming back to Tampa to do that. Khan is so determined on getting Liam Cohen and making him the new head coach and having this vision for this offense, which I think with Trevor Lawrence, I mean, I think there's you found the quarterback. And that division, I mean, you can win in that division. And so I think it's a pretty good job. You have a top pick and you've got your quarterback. So it clearly, Liam Cohen was interested in the job, but just felt like the front office and the organization wasn't ready and wasn't the right move. And then when Tampa offers him this big deal, he's going to take it. He goes back to Tampa. They fire Baalke and call him back, and he spurns the Tampa Bay Bucks, goes back, and takes the job as head coach of the Jacksonville Jaguars. And there's some thought that, I mean, there's reporting that they called him while he was, that Tampa Bay was like, where are you? And called him. And because he was meeting with the Jags, I don't know if it's true or not, but there's reports that he kind of said something about his son being sick. And then, you know, he spoke to Todd Bowles and mentioned that, you know, maybe I'm going back to Jacksonville. But then there's been reports that the contract was contingent on him not having a second meeting with Jacksonville. So that's why he lied about where he was. But can you imagine if a Jets head coaching candidate that they wanted to hire said no, left, went back to his original team, the team he was just coordinating with. The Jets make a decision in the front office. They bring him back under all of this scrutiny. It would just be same old Jets. I mean, and now we'll see. Khan gets a lot of crap, and maybe it'll be same old Jacksonville. But it is just the same. Like, the Jets wouldn't get the benefit of the doubt. And listen, that Jacksonville Jaguars team is run as about as poorly as any in the sport. Like, we've I believe in Trevor Lawrence on some level. I don't know if he'll become one of the top quarterbacks. I don't know if he'll be Joe Burrow or Allen or Lamar or any of those guys. But I do think you can win with him. And I think he's been let down by the organization like so many of these quarterbacks have been. But, I mean, if you look at their draft picks, if you look at some of the contracts they gave to Christian Kirk and some of the wide receivers, drafting a running back and Travis Etienne, who's not been, you know, who had some moments his rookie season, but is a average NFL running back at best, and they drafted him in the first round. Like, there's been a bunch of issues with this with this Jacksonville Jaguars team. I mean, it is an absolute joke. They keep a GM nobody wants who's done a terrible job when a coordinator who's been at a bunch of different spots. Now, he had a great year with Tampa Bay, right? But he's been back up and forth, Kentucky, Tampa Bay. He's been like kind of all over the place. He was with the Rams for a year, which is anyone who's, you know, touched by the Rams and has the blessing of McVay seems to get any job he wants. But he's so enamored with this coach who had a great year, who has turned, you know, I mean, I know Baker Mayfield's had good years, but Baker Mayfield into this, you know, force offensively disappointing end to their season, obviously, against Washington. But, like, he's done a really nice job there. The Tampa Bay puts up a bunch of points. He's been one of the guys kind of bandied about as one of the new offensive minds, obviously Ben Johnson number one, but he's been kind of in that secondary discussion of these young executives or young coordinators who's going to be up for a job. But they keep a GM. Everybody turns them down. It looks like Robert Saleh might be lucking into a job because he's the kind of next choice for Jacksonville. But they felt so strongly about not hiring Robert Saleh that they said, oh, we'll fire the GM and we'll bring back the candidate we love. And just, I mean, it's just, if the Giants or Jets did that right now, it would be they'd be a laughingstock. They would get no benefit of the doubt. The story would be such a mess. But that is an interesting story. He's going to get the biggest contract in history for a coordinator. And then he ends up taking the job that he excused himself and took himself out of the running for the day before. Just weird. Just weird. But we'll see if he can go down there and help Trevor Lawrence. Because, again, as bad as they've been for the last year and a half, they were in London kicking ass 2 years ago. And they came back from London with the number one seed. And then Trevor Lawrence got hurt, and it went downhill, and they blew that division, including up until the last game where they had a chance to still win the division and blew it. And then this year they were awful. But I don't think it's the... I think that Jacksonville team isn't terrible, and I think you can still have faith in Trevor Lawrence to kind of turn it around. But that's an interesting situation. I just heard Marco say it, and we're getting into it. 888-808-1019. But it is Championship Sunday. And we'll get into that. We'll do the picks in the 3 o'clock hour. We'll get into the nitty gritty of it and the matchups we like and everything. But I just, like, as we get ready for these games, I am fascinated by the quarterback. Obviously, I mean the quarterback dynamic in both of these games, and it's a little different, obviously. But Josh Allen and up against his final boss. And up against Patrick Mahomes on the road, having the year they had, because the Buffalo team, they started the year with, I think it was $70 million in dead cap money. They were in cap hell, $70 million. They have no real weapons in the pass game. They were forced to, you know, move on from a couple of different defensive players. Everybody's talking about them having a down year. And Josh Allen has willed them into this game and into another great season and into, you know, an MVP type year. And he got them past Lamar Jackson, although I think Lamar Jackson and the Baltimore Ravens had more to do with it than him. And we'll get into that during the pick segment a little bit and why I'm kind of confident. I feel like it's going to be a very tough game for the Bills to win. But this is the game that Josh Allen, you know, this is what's going to make his career. Like, because it's hard to get to this spot over and over and over again. Unless you're Tom Brady, unless you're Patrick Mahomes, unless you have Andy Reid, because I don't think McDermott is on the Bill Belichick, Andy Reid type level of head coaching. This is not an easy game to consistently get back to. And it feels like to me, I mean, I said it last year, so it's only a year later. But last year it felt like, wow, you got him at home. It was the year that they were the offense and Patrick Mahomes and that Kansas City Chiefs team wasn't nearly who they've been. They were bound to have a down year, and this is it. You're catching them right at the right time. You've got them in your building. If you can't win this game, when can you? They were the hottest team in the NFL, the Bills, off a shaky start to the year. They had won 5-6 games and won the division and thrusted themselves into the top of the second seed in the home game against Patrick Mahomes, and they couldn't get it done. And so this is, it feels like, on now, like last year it felt because of the winning streak and because of the way Kansas City had played all year, and it was in Buffalo, that was the year they were going to do it. And now it feels like that maybe that was the year Buffalo was finally going to do it. This feels like the year that Allen's going to finally do it, because he has put this team on his back. This has been an incredible season for him. He is the entire team. He has elevated them to a level where they're in this game and only, what is it? Is it still just a point and a half? A point and a half underdog to the number one Chiefs seed, Patrick Mahomes, Andy Reid, a team with $70 million worth of dead cap money, no real wide receivers to speak of. Cooper, they traded for, has been a non-factor with the team. They run the football well. And he, other than that, they have, you know, not a lot of major strengths. Like, looking at this matchup in this game, where are the Bills better than the Chiefs? Like, you know, maybe Cook in that run game is slightly more dynamic and more powerful. But, I mean, where are they better than the Chiefs? And yet here they are, and they took on, they come from beating Baltimore, which, by the way, Baltimore's the better team. And I think it was clear in that game. Baltimore beat themselves. If Baltimore doesn't make mistakes, they win that game. And that's why, you know, it's going to be part of the reason why I just have a tough time thinking that this Chiefs team is going to make mistakes. This is what they do. These are the games they play. Patrick Mahomes, especially in his building, with the temperature under 40 degrees is 20-0 in the last 20 times. Under 40 degrees in his building, 20 in a row. They are not going to make mistakes. They're, you know, Kelsey's not going to fumble. Kelsey's not going to drop a two-point conversion. Mahomes isn't going to throw the killer pick. They haven't turned the ball over yet this postseason. But it's not going to happen. And this Buffalo team and Josh Allen is going to have to figure out a way to play their best game of the year. Because this isn't, I think they're better than last year's Kansas City team. I think they won't make the mistake that Baltimore made. They're in their building with the best quarterback and the best coach, the best defense, the best weapons offensively. They're just better almost everywhere. And that's what Josh Allen's got to deal with. And so the coronation of Josh Allen seems obvious. That to me, that's what I'm most looking forward to. I'm going to turn on that football game and go, all right, Josh, show me you can beat him. And I think he's got the lesser team. But that's what the game is about to me. Can Josh Allen do it? Can Josh Allen take this team, go into Kansas City, and find a way to raise his game and drag this team to the Super Bowl? And then, you know, the other game is just how great is this young quarterback? Because you want to talk about better. I mean, I've just been telling you the Chiefs are better than the Bills. It's not even close. The Philadelphia Eagles are far superior. Think about what this is right now. This is a rookie quarterback from the sixth seed going to play on the road in the conference championship. No rookie quarterback has ever won this game. No rookie quarterback has ever been in the Super Bowl. And the Eagles are far superior at everything except one position. And right now, I mean, you could say that one position is the pass game, and clearly, I don't know how hurt or impacted because of the injury we're going to see from Jalen Hurts. I don't know even know how important that is, to be totally honest with you. I'm not even sure how important it is that he is completely healthy. I mean, he's got to be at a level where he can play the game, clearly, but they don't need the passing attack to be at the top of its game. They don't need him to be able to scramble for a 40-yard touchdown as he did last week against the Rams. Like, they just need him to be smart with the football, be able to throw it a little bit, be able to avoid the rush on occasion, move the pocket a little bit, and get the ball out of his hand. Because this run game and this defense should be a pretty damn good matchup, because at the line of scrimmage, it's not close both ways. The Eagles are far superior at the line of scrimmage on both sides of the ball. They're going to dominate the line of scrimmage both ways. And I understand that this run game is so predicated on big plays, but what they do is they wear you down. Like, they wear you down, and not Saquon Barkley. And this isn't to bash Saquon Barkley. I'm not trying to. He's a great running back, and he's the one who makes these, him in the running and the offensive line, wear you down. That offensive line is so good that even if the running game isn't successful early or isn't making big plays early, they just beat you and pound you and get out to the second level. Everybody gets hit. Linebackers get hit. They pound you physically, and they keep running it and running it and running it until the second half, when they've beaten you so much that Barkley finds a crease and he's gone for 60. It happens all the time. He makes those big plays typically in the second half after just physically, the offensive line physically dominating that the defensive front against them. And Washington doesn't, like, their defensive, the run game, and especially at the second level, is not very good. It's probably the weakness of the team. And so, I mean, here's the question to me when we get into this game, because I believe Philadelphia is a second-half team. If this game is relatively close at the half, I think we're going to have a game. I think they have to keep it close. If Philadelphia goes into the lead with into the half with a lead, like a 10-point lead, there, I don't think there's any way they catch up. As great as he is, as great as Daniels is. And that's the question, because a little bit like Josh Allen, although he's a rookie in this game on the road, like in a game no rookie has ever won, is he good enough to drag this team that's clearly inferior to its opponent to a Super Bowl? It's as much as I love him and as much as I've gone on and on about him and as much as I'm scared of the idea of Washington winning this game, it's such a tough ask. It is such a tough ask. He went into the Lions and beat them and played great. The Lions made terrible mistakes. Goff was careless with the football. Like, I don't think Philadelphia's going to play that way. I think Philadelphia's going to come in and try and run the ball down their throat, especially with a banged up Hurts. They'll be careful in the passing game. They'll try and make it work for them. It'll probably be, you know, a lot of short, intermediate stuff, maybe a couple of chances on third and short, because they know they have the tush push, and Sirianni does a lot of that on third and short. We'll take chances knowing he's got fourth down. Like, but ultimately, like, they're going to try and run the football with Barkley. He's got the prop. His prop is, let me just double check it. I saw it at 133. His rushing over under is 133 yards. That, okay, actually, right now I just went to FanDuel, 125. It's at minus 114, but that's about right. 125. I thought I saw 133 earlier in the week. 125 right now. That is a huge number for an over-under on rushing yards. Huge. So I think that's, you know, the game plan, but Jaden Daniels is a wild card here because he looked poised. He looked ready. He didn't look overtaken by the moment at all. And they are aggressive. They've got nothing to lose, everything, because how embarrassing would this loss be for Philadelphia? As embarrassing as it was for the Detroit Lions, think of how embarrassing it is in your division. The rookie quarterback comes in and wins a game no rookie quarterback has ever won, while you are a 6-point favorite in your building, went to a Super Bowl 2 years ago, and you allow a rookie quarterback who now you have to go against twice a year forever to come into your building before he's really ready to and beat you in a game that you're 6.5-point favorites in? I mean, most teams, like, you know, the Chiefs, they're the one seed. They got to deal with the Bills, right? They would have had to have dealt with the Bills or the Ravens. You're telling me a Philadelphia team gets to the NFC Championship game and they get a rookie quarterback 6 seed? As great as he is, You get a rookie quarterback. You have to go against a rookie quarterback in this game and a six seed and a team that you're better than at almost every position other than the quarterback. And hell, the quarterback makes $50 million for the Eagles. So I don't know if it's even fair. I mean, it's 1 year to even say he's better than Hurts. I mean, I think right now he's playing better than Hurts, and certainly with Hurts banged up. But this is a spot for Philadelphia. They are getting as good a matchup as you could possibly hope for on championship weekend. A rookie quarterback six seed as opposed to the Lions. So, I mean, this is a game Philadelphia can't lose. It feels like a game Buffalo can't lose, and it feels like a game Philadelphia can't lose for different reasons, but for Philadelphia, the embarrassing nature of it, they're 6.5-point favorites. They're going up against a rookie quarterback playing with a six seed who they know extremely well, who they're far more talented than. And for Buffalo, it feels like, again, I know we said it last year, and they're getting another crack at it, but if Josh Allen this year, like, it's not easy to get back here year in, year out. I mean, they keep doing it. And Kansas City keeps doing it, but it's tough to get back here. And it felt like Josh Allen's year all year long. He's been the talk of the NFL all year long. And I'm hoping he does it, but I don't see it. I think it's going to be tough for me not to be on Kansas City. It's going to be tough for me not to be on Philadelphia. But I'm going to try. We'll see when we get to the pick segment.
Everyone has an opinion. Let's hear yours. Call 888-808-1019. Powered by Paramount Plus. Stream every NFL on CBS playoff game. Live on Paramount Plus.
All right, 133, McMonagle here with you on the Fan, 888-808-1019. Let's get to the phones. We've talked a little baseball, and then we just got into the championship weekend a little bit. We'll do more of that, obviously. We're going to do picks in the late 3 o'clock hour, probably sometime around 3:45, so Marco can partake. But again, I don't know. I think I'm on both favorites. I think it's going to be tough. I'll pick Washington and just have a completely emotional hedge kind of weekend because I'm really pulling for the Bills. And I can't imagine Jaden Daniels winning this game. I heard Evan talking about it today a little bit. I just don't know how, as a Giant fan, you'd rather see this team in within 1 year become a Super Bowl caliber team. I'll feel so much better about things if watching this game, it just turns out that the Lions were too banged up and crapped the bed, and the quarterback turned the ball over too much. And when they faced the Eagles here, they lost by 3 touchdowns. I would feel so much better about that than this kid being able to win this game. The first rookie quarterback ever to play in a Super Bowl in my division, as I watched in the offseason, the Giants pine to hopefully be able to get him. No, thank you. No, thank you. I don't care. I heard Marash say that it gives him faith that for a quick turnaround. And we'll talk about the Giants quarterback situation as, you know, now you're starting to hear as the season's coming to an end and we're all focusing on the draft and GMs are being hired and fired and coaches are being hired and fired. And we're starting to hear about players available and Tennessee is telling you they won't pass up on a generational talent. I've seen a couple of breakdowns of Shedeur Sanders and some of the comps you're hearing aren't, you know, that great, kind of very accurate. Best, you know, passer as far as just pure passer. Ball comes out of his hand as good as anyone in the draft, better than anyone in the draft, but the arm strength is an elite. Not really much of an athlete. But he can be accurate and get rid of the ball, and as long as you can block for him and do everything, maybe, just maybe. Like a Chad Pennington type. Doesn't excite you. Doesn't excite you. Cam Ward excites me more, but ultimately, and you're hearing that the Giants are high on Shedeur Sanders. I know it's not the same as saying in Joe Shane, I know it's not the same as saying in David Stearns we trust. Right now, he's bought a lot more faith in how the Mets performed in the second half of the year and into the playoffs, but you got to trust them. They're here. They're the GM and head coach. And if they believe Shedeur Sanders is the guy, then Shedeur Sanders is the guy. And I'll be excited. Whoever, if they get a quarterback, I'll be so happy to know I'll be rooting for wins the entire season. How about at least that? It gives you that, Giant fans. You know, if they draft a young quarterback, whether it's Shedeur Sanders or Cam Ward, at the top of that draft, you will be rooting for victories the entire year. Or at least you'll have something to watch and will root for good play. 888-808-1019. Lou in Long Island. What's up, Lou?
Hey, what's up, brother?
Oh, there you are, Lou. Thank you. What's up?
I want to talk about Pete Alonso.
Sure.
I mean, I'm pissed off.
Okay.
I mean, you're telling me that we can't get a home. I'm tired of buying jerseys. I'm tired of it.
Yeah.
I am absolutely tired of buying. I got a blue jersey. I'm tired of.
Well, you're gonna get. They're gonna unveil the new alternate road jersey tomorrow.
Oh,
it's gonna be very exciting.
Exactly. Another one.
Yeah.
And you know what really? You really kind of made me upset talking about the Giants. What are we gonna get? A quarterback? Come on.
Yeah, you're gonna get a. Hopefully, we get a quarterback.
What? Because the Titans don't want a quarterback.
Sounds like it. Maybe. Yeah.
Because they believe that Hunter
is the generational talent, and they don't want to pass up on him.
Well, maybe we want to have Bill Carter. But let's get back to the mess.
Mm-hmm.
Are you kidding me? The Blue Jays are going to offer $100 million, and now we can't. Well, we offered $70 million, and we're going to move on to the boy genius. I will tell you what.
You sound just like Joe Beningo.
Beningo is. This is unbelievable.
Yeah. Thank you, Lou. You sound just like Joe. I heard Joe's rant. It's excellent. You love Joe. And I understand his point. He's been a Met fan for forever, and they never keep the guy. They never keep their guy. Right? He gave you all the names. Strawberry and Daniel Murphy and Mitchell and David Cone. And the only great player that has stayed in the uniform is David Wright. That's it. Everyone else has left at some point. Rusty Staub. I forget all the names he mentioned. He had a whole bunch of names of great Met players. Oh, Tom Seaver, obviously, first and foremost. All these great players who don't stick around and finish their careers with the Mets. And I could understand wanting that. I mean, thankfully, you know, as a Yankee fan, I have it. I have a bunch. I have a bunch from the golden age of my childhood. I got Derek Jeter, Mariano Rivera. I've got Bernie Williams, Jorge Posada. It feels like Andy Pettit, but there are 3 years in the middle there. But he started and ended his career with the Yankees, but it's not Andy Pettit, but it feels like it. But that's enough right there. You got the core four plus Bernie. Actually, not the core four. I would include Andy Pettit, idiot. You've got the core four with Bernie instead of Andy. So, I mean, like, I've got guys that have finished their careers, and now Judge is going to be the guy who finishes his career in a Yankee uniform. I mean, can't promise he won't play after his 9-year contract is done, but I'd feel pretty good about that pretty much being his whole career. And the Mets don't have that. And I could understand frustration with that. I don't think it should override whether or not you do what's best for the team. I don't. And again, I'm coming from a different place where I have that. I have Derek Jeter. I have Mariano. I have Jorge Posada. I have. So I get it. I have Judge. But I still don't think it's worth doing what you think is best for the team. Now, we could disagree on what's best for the team, but just flat out, he's a great player. He could be one of our great players. I want him back no matter what. I don't think that's a fair statement, but when you look at it's a difference of $5 million, if you're willing to offer him 68, won't you offer him 75? Like, can't you work with him a little bit to secure this player who, by the way, makes you far more competitive this year? The replacements are not going to be anything near what Pete Alonso is. It seems like in-house replacements. It's not like they're going to go out and sign another free agent. They're not going to go get another player. They're not going to make a trade for a first baseman. They're going to move Vientos over to first, and they're going to play Mauricio, or they're going to play Beatty, or they're going to play whoever at third base. I mean, that's the option. I mean, we talked about it a lot last year with the New York Yankees with Juan Soto, and it's a different situation because it was 1 year of Juan Soto, so it was all in for Soto. This is the year. You finished 82 wins the year before. You got Juan Soto. You have to go all in and put the best team on the field to win a championship this year. Soto's the same for the Mets, but I understand it's over the course of 15 years. It's a different scenario. But still, you want to give this team this year, you want to be big brother? I've talked about this too. Like, now, what are you, Steve Cohen? What are you? Because you made a move not only to get a great player. You made a move to change the dynamic of the city. You took the Yankees head on and were not going to lose, weren't going to be denied. And you can't tell me it's solely just because he's a great player. It can't just be Soto's a great player, because I'll be the first to tell you, as much as I'd be willing to pay anything because it's not my money and ultimately it's probably, you know, not as bad a deal, is he worth $765 million? Is any player? The reason that you wouldn't be denied Steve Cohen is partially he's a great player, partially he's going to be great for the next 15 years, but there was also a partially, and maybe mostly that, but partially was you got him from the Yankees, you made your big statement, you arrived on the scene, and you're adding to a team that surprised the world and got to the NLCS last year. And now you've come up small since. I don't think there's any Met fan would have to agree with that, no? Juan Soto makes you a better team. And if you want to say, hey, my offense was pretty damn good last year and I just made one change. I swapped out Pete Alonso for Juan Soto. I'm going to be better offensively. That's fair. And even pitching-wise, you want to tell me, hey, they did it last year. David Peterson showed me something. Manaea is back with the new crossfire arm slot and he was dynamic and was the best pitcher in baseball, arguably, for the last 3 weeks of the year. And Sanger, you know how good he is when he's healthy, and he'll be back. And Montas has a good arm, and if he could stay healthy, and you know, I believe in the pitching lab of the New York Mets to turn Clay Holmes from a failed closer into a good 4-5 starter in a championship rotation. Okay, that's a lot of ifs. That's a lot of I hopes. I mean, that rotation would scare the hell out of me. You're going up against the Dodgers, who, quite honestly, you could make an argument the Dodgers could have their starting five and then take their next five starting pitchers and put up a rotation as good or better than the Mets with their 6, 7, 8, 9. Could be just as good as the Mets 1, 2, 3, 4. I mean, that's how loaded the Dodgers are. The Braves just got another outfielder in Profar. I mean, and Acuna's going to come back. They're going to be good. The Braves are young, talented, and good. The Phillies were the best team in the division last year, and you were able to beat them in the playoffs, no doubt, but you got to compete for a division, compete for a playoff spot. I mean, those two teams in your division, that's very difficult. And you don't have a single pitcher right now that I feel uber confident in is the kind of pitcher who ends losing streaks. Do you have that ace who will, you know, I know he's going to end a losing streak for me. He's going to be that guy when I need him. I mean, Manaea was that for a lot of the second half of last year. We sure that's what he will be this year? Now that the league's got a little bit more of an extended look at the new arm angle? And the new mechanics? I don't know. I would be very, very worried. I would be concerned if I'm a Met fan. Yeah, we're happy. Yes, we trust David Stearns. Yes, there's still more to do. Yes, there's a trade deadline. We got to see. I'm open to it. And last year, I was saying the same stuff that I'm saying now, and they were 11 games under 500, and I looked like I was right. And then they went on this unbelievable run and became the best team in baseball for the second half. So anything is possible. I'm not saying the Mets are presently, as presently constituted, can't compete. Of course they can. But being okay, like last year you went in with, hey, if everything breaks right, we could be pretty damn good and compete for a playoff spot. Tell me how right now the feeling is any different. Tell me how this new team that is the big brother in the city, that you look at this team and feel really any different than, hey, if things break right, okay, maybe it's last year was if things break right, we can make the playoffs. This year, if things break right, we could be a contender. Because you need a rotation to break right. You need a bullpen to break right. You need Vientos to have the same type of year. You need Lindor to have the same type of year. You need whoever you put at third base to step up and be better offensively. You need, you know, Winker to do what he did in the second half of last year. You got a lot of, you know, you need Marte to stay healthy. What's Jeff McNeil? What's Jose Siri? All right, I don't think you head into this year, especially in a very difficult National League. If you were in the American League, it'd be a different story. You're in the National League. Do you head into this season feeling a lot different than last year? A lot different than, hey, if things break right, we can really compete. This year it feels like, hey, if things break right, okay, we could be a contender. I mean, I don't think you're a losing team by any stretch, but are the Mets a 95 to 100 win team right now? No, I don't think so. I really don't. I think Pete Alonso will get you closer. And isn't that what you're trying to do? Because if you're the new big man on campus, you're the new big brother of this city. If you want to wear the crown of big brother in this city, it comes with expectations of World Series or bust. Paul in Hartford. What's up, Paul?
Hey, how you doing, Chris?
Good. How are you, buddy?
What you just said, I agree with as a diehard Met fan. The thing is, Alonso, in his career, has never had anyone hit behind him. And you could tell me right now, tonight, who will Soto have hit behind him? We're talking about Winker.
Probably Vientos.
No. Okay.
Yeah. I would think it would be Lindor, Soto, Vientos. And then Winker.
And from there. Yeah, and then Winker.
Maybe. I hear you.
And we're talking about playing Winker at first base, Chris. And that's a big issue.
I think they'll probably go Vientos at first base, but maybe Winker.
That's a big hole. And they didn't sign Tanner Scott.
No.
So they didn't try to go with the philosophy of we're gonna build a big bullpen.
They got Minter, and what they're trying to tell you is, and I understand. Look, here's the thing, and here's my. It's kind of your point, I think, and we're gonna, and it's kind of my point too. The Mets are going to rely on David Stearns is smart, and he's going to do all smart things. And you know what smart things are? Not paying a 30-year-old pitcher an extended contract, no matter how great he is. Not going and paying a reliever $18 million like Tanner Scott. Not going to give Pete Alonso a 3-year deal when he's lumbering 30 years old, one-dimensional player, when I can have more flexibility. Every one of those things in a bubble is a understandably smart baseball decision in today's day and age. All of them. But the fact of the matter is, are you trying to win a championship? Because I can tell you, there is some, the Dodgers have made all of those. And nobody is calling them stupid. The Dodgers have given a 30-plus-year-old starting pitcher a big-time long contract. They just paid Tanner Scott $18 million. And nobody's saying, wow, the Dodgers are stupid. But yet with the Mets, we're very, very, we want to make sure that we're very, very smart. And we want to make sure that we don't do anything that seems like there's value for things, and we're going to stick to the value. And we have a pitching lab, and we're going to get all these guys in here where they're good value pieces, and they're not overextending, and we don't have them for multiple years, and we'll figure something out. And you know what? They were good, and we believe we can get the most out of them. I see something in Clay Holmes. I see something in Frankie Montas. And I was right about Manaea and Severino last year. I'll be right about them this year, and we'll build a rotation, and I'll take Minter all day long for $11 million instead of the better pitcher for $18 million, because only idiots would give a relief pitcher $18 million because they are fickle and you can't count on them. And yet the Dodgers do it, and ain't nobody calling the Dodgers stupid.
Nope, exactly right. And you know what the thing is? We got Clifford. We have Williams.
Yeah.
We got all these guys. We got Gilbert. Dude, I'm glad they kept Gilbert. Do you know what the thing is that we don't have? We don't have a first baseman for the future unless they have big eyes on Murakami and Guerrero Jr.
Yeah.
What are you going to do? Give Guerrero Jr. another $500 million next year? No, sign P to the contract and let him perform in New York and do your thing. And this guy has absolutely gone out there and raked and played 160 games every year. And you know what? He's now an affordable contract. Go out there, Cohen, match the contract, make it happen, and move on, and now build a winning team to win a World Series and get some guys and get some guys out in the starting rotation. Thank you.
Yeah, you got it. I mean, that's my whole point on how the Mets are going about building their team is there's a lot of smart decisions, and they're looking at it in a very sound way, and they spent big on Juan Soto, so you can't say they don't spend. They've had the highest payroll in baseball the last 2 years. They went out and gave $765 million, the largest contract in the history of professional sports, to Juan Soto, so they're not cheap. They're willing to spend. But it's the combination of both worlds. They have a young, smart executive who comes from Milwaukee and mid-market thinking, and they have the rich owner who's willing to spend big money. And they're trying to ride that fine line. And it might work unbelievably well. All of these smart moves and the picking and choosing where to spend the big money, it seems very reasonable to me. It seems very smart to me. And it might end up being what leads this team into the next great generation of Met baseball, where you're playing in the World Series on a somewhat regular basis over the next, I don't know, 5 to 8 to 10 years. That's very possible. But sometimes when you are trying to compete for a championship, when you have expectations, when your fan base has expectations, this is why I defend Brian Cashman on some level at different times. Because Brian Cashman probably agrees that the Max Fried contract isn't the smartest thing to do. He probably understands that he'd rather run things a different way on some level. But they need Max Fried if they want to win this year. And they'll need Max Fried after losing Juan Soto if they want to win next year. And you can be smart in some spaces and you can be foolish in others. And there's a line where you can make moves, and certainly with the Steinbrenners, they've drawn a line in the sand, and right now Brian Cashman is trying everything to move Marcus Stroman before he's willing to spend any more money. But throughout Brian Cashman's history, he's been forced to make trades, forced to make moves in the name of chasing championships. Now, haven't caught enough over the last 15 years, and that's probably what a Met fan would tell me, or a Yankee hater and Brian Cashman hater would tell me. Well, that sounds great, Chris. It's just the kind of logic that got you to no championships over the last 15 years. Understandable. And maybe I'm wrong here, and maybe all these moves are exactly what you need to do. But if you want to win, you got to give Pete Alonso a little bit more. You want to win? You got to find a pitcher or two that you trust to give a contract to. You want to win? Every once in a while when your bullpen needs it, you get the best reliever, even if it's a little bit more money. You don't have to do all of them, and all of them have reasons not to do it. But at some point, every once in a while, you got to take that leap. And this year, they took their leap of Juan Soto, and they ain't taking another one. They took the Juan Soto leap, and now they're doing the smart moves. It's a Steve Cohen and David Stearns era. The big pocket meets the mid-market mind. The big pocket went out and got Juan Soto, and the mid-market mind is doing the rest. And maybe it'll work. Maybe it'll work.